Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our host will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our host will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air.
Hello and welcome back to Republic Forces Radio Network, where we review the Clone Wars animated series. And tonight we're going to be talking about Season 5, Episode 12, Missing in Action. I'm Jonathan, and with me, as they have been for this arc, are Nathan.
Hey, everybody.
Jen.
Hey, guys.
And Jerry. And Jerry.
Hey, you see how I did that? I was missing in action. Get it? Hey, guys. Sorry. This is Jerry. Glad to be here.
And before we begin, we'd like to congratulate Clone Wars is making 100 episodes, the magic number for syndication. So hopefully we'll be seeing Clone Wars a little bit more in circulation. This episode, Missing in Action, we pick up where we left off last year with our five droids and a frog.
Sounds like a really bad Muppets episode.
Doesn't it, though?
Or something. Five droids and a frog walking to a bar.
Well, hey, and that's almost apropos this time. I know that we were all disappointed with the last episode, A Sunny Day in the Void, but this one, what did you guys think? And we'll mix it up a little bit. Start the year off. Ladies first. Jen, what did you think?
Okay. You remember, anybody remember that sound bite that Dan made with me, like, fakey swearing, where he bleeped out, like, every other word? When the credits rolled for this, that's kind of what was going on, only it was real. I was very frustrated with this episode. I wanted to like it. I really did. It had a clone commando in it, one of my favorite things in the whole of Star Wars, and so I feel like this episode really exemplifies a lot of the problems that I have with this series. I love the Clone Wars overall, but its problems, this episode really kind of nails it, where I feel like there was a lot of missed opportunity and a lot of just bait and switch in the advertising for the episode, which I think the fans are really getting frustrated with. I feel like there's a lot they could have done with this clone, like even with the amnesia thing. I feel like there was such an opportunity for them to go into like the psychology of the clone, since they've been bred to be really docile and to accept, you know, orders from an outside individual. And I feel like there could have been some really interesting stuff they did with that, or he could have been undercover, or there could have been so many things they could have done. And instead he was at the mercy of a evil diner owner, and that I wanted to like it, and I just didn't care for this episode.
So Jen, even the Republic commando in action, that 3-minute, 4-minute snippet at the end where he's just like being a total bad dude, that wasn't the money shot for you?
I knew he was gonna die, so the vein in my forehead was throbbing the whole time because I was waiting for him to go.
Jerry, why don't you continue that? Let us know what you thought of the episode.
Yeah, you know, Jen, you hit something just perfectly on the head. I mean, for me, this episode it was infinitely stronger than last year, you know, the last episode that we reviewed. And however, that's not saying a whole lot. Now, what I can say, and you know, what I just said to you, Jen, I mean, the action at the end and seeing a Republic commando in action, that was really cool. I think the journey to get there was still a little lame. I mean, it's kind of like one of those things. They made a big deal in one of the featurettes, the one called Gregor's Metamorphosis, which featured a lot of good kind of behind the scenes with D. Bradley Baker and Dave Filoni. They talked about how they were able to get in there and understand what it's like for a clone to have amnesia. The note I wrote for that was like, okay, you're answering a question that nobody asked. It's like, okay, I didn't care about that. That's nothing I've ever been curious about. I mean, and Jen, you said something that I thought very specifically, which was, couldn't they have written this a little smarter such that maybe they were able to make some contact? Maybe they're intentionally trying to go to this planet earlier, like in the second episode. Yeah, they crash landed, but like, hey, this is where we need to go to meet our contact. We have a Republic agent here to intercept it, and boom, all of this exact same stuff happens. You've got amnesia, the diner owner, his evil master plan. He's the antagonist here, and his evil scheme is to use this guy as a dishwasher. Kind of weak. Overall, though, I mean, not a bad episode. There are some things that I enjoyed that we'll get into. I probably went into too many specifics here, just my opening thoughts. But overall, a fine episode. I put it on par with the first episode. Okay, could live with or without it. Definitely far better than what we got last time.
Thanks, Jerry. And Nathan, why don't you give us your thoughts?
You know, I agree with Jerry. It was better than what we got last time around. Again, kind of like being valedictorian of summer school in a sense. I mean, last episode could have ended with them crashing, dropped all the stuff in the last about half of that episode, just had them show up at the town and then picked up with this. And we could have ended with this as a solid lead-in to this second half of the season. Maybe end it with him finally putting his helmet back on or something. And then they could have expanded this out. I would say I liked the episode. I thought it was a pretty decent one. I mean, it had a few amusing moments. It had a lot of nice little inside references. It actually even referenced a battle scene in the Clone Wars comic, which is almost unheard of. At the same time, though, it did sort of feel like there were a lot of missed opportunities. It was very simplified down. I spent part of my semester break here going through and watching all four of the Bourne movies, and I just started reading the original Jason Bourne novels, the ones that at least the first film were based on. So this idea of an amnesiac clone and what might he still remember, what skills might he still possess, how is his personality changed by his circumstances rather than his genetic makeup, it's a very intriguing concept, but it was one that it would have been nice if it had maybe even been the sole heart of an entire arc in and of itself, as opposed to it being essentially just the heart of this one episode in an arc that, for the most part, is not about him. You know, his sacrifice here, and granted, Filoni says, you know, he expects the character to come back and not to really have, because he promised he would live, and Filoni likes the idea of people keeping their promises and all that. I don't know. I mean, no matter how open the prospects are of the character possibly coming back in some form someday, it still feels like he was just kind of an insert, and we got a really intriguing concept dumped into a really kind of crappy arc. It should have been the other way around. We should have had him as the storyline and then maybe a quick part of an episode about the droids and Gascon. You know, it seems like there's something flip-flopped in their approach here.
And I'm going to kind of echo you guys. Well, as you know, I watch these episodes a couple of times before we record. And the first time I watched the episode, I really liked it. I thought it was fun. But the second time I watched it, you know, and I know some of our critics say we nitpick a little bit too much, but I noticed a couple of things that I was like, well, gee, that seems convenient. And I agree. I really think that I would have liked to see the role of Gregor kind of expanded. I think it all happened a little too quickly and a little too easily. Him just kind of, poof, he got his memory back. And I think maybe I would have liked to have seen him work for that a little bit more. But overall, an enjoyable episode.
And you know what, Jonathan? You know, one thing that you and I definitely have in common is our love of vintage collectibles, as we often talk about over at Star Wars Action News. And one of the first images in this episode that just really jumped out and grabbed me, and I kind of got some hints from it from other people on Facebook who watched the show before I did, but they didn't totally ruin the surprise, was the first in-canon, let's call it, appearance of not Ponda Baba, as some people have referred to him, but as Walrus Man. Walrus Man is a real guy now.
I really enjoyed seeing that, too. It brought a smile to my face. And at the end of the last episode, our characters made it to Pons Ora, the city that they're in now, and they begin making their way into the city proper. And we see some interesting bands of characters. We see Walrus Man, but one thing that I caught on my second viewing that kind of surprised me, I think we see one of the first examples, and maybe the first example, of a streetwalker in the Star Wars universe. Did any of you catch that?
Honestly, I didn't.
There was a female character standing in a doorway, and as they're walking by, you see a male character walk by. She steps forward, and he kind of waves her off, and she kind of steps back. And maybe my mind's in the gutter, but I interpret it as the first in Star Wars streetwalker. So hats off to you guys. You've gone new places.
Well, this is the 100th episode. I mean, they got to be a little more progressive now.
But I did like how this town had some character. Did you guys think so?
I'd say it did. I mean, we had our little, was it Alima character who holds up somebody else, you know, who's much, much bigger than he is. I guess one way to put it would be to say that the town had characters. I'm not sure the town itself had character. The town, I mean, honestly, if you had asked at the end of last episode whether or not this was a ghost town or there was anyone living there, I would have said it was a ghost town. It didn't seem as though there was much to give any indication that this town would have much life to it at all, especially on a planet that seemed not to have really had much of anything. It seemed as it would go right along with the theme of the last episode for it to have been an abandoned city. Instead, what we get is what looks like an abandoned city with a few little pockets of characters here and there to give us a little bit of their, I guess, a sense of sort of their lifestyle. But I never got the sense that this is a living, breathing city the way that I did, say, with the capital Issus on Onderon, where we had all the different, you know, reactions to our characters from the people in the crowd and all that kind of stuff. It just seemed as though this one was just sort of, who can we stick in here to have some quick, funny little bit to go along with our relatively dead scenery?
But I think maybe the dead scenery was part of the point, and that's why, you know, so you saw people sort of darting in and out, and they obviously have a pretty bad vermin problem in this city as well. As you see, if you went to StarWars.com and check some of the slideshows, they put a lot of little sort of tongue-in-cheek in-jokes here. What'd you guys think? Did you guys go and read that?
I did see it. I love the Admiral Snack Bar. It's a frap!
There were a lot of sort of the tongue-in-cheek jokes, the Admiral Snack Bar. What was the name of the diner that they go to?
Power Slider. But it says Hour Slider because the P is messed up.
Mm-hmm. Jen, why don't you chime in? What did you think of this environment? I know you're still steaming because you know what we get to, but, you know, try to let it go.
I was really surprised, just like Nathan, that this was a populated town, because from the previous episode, I thought it was like an abandoned outpost or something. It didn't give me the feeling of anything more than like a Baru and Owen farm kind of thing on the last episode. So I was surprised. I caught Walrus Man and like I was enjoying that part, and I kind of liked that everything was just dirty and disgusting, and like there's crud on the walls, like where there's piping, and everything is just gross. And I felt like that was kind of neat. It was a really nice attention to detail. I didn't feel like there was like a ton of character. I missed the slideshow, unfortunately, because that sounds like it would have been a lot of fun. But they did a good job making this feel like a really unpleasant place, kind of really poverty stricken, not, you know, ideal, with people just kind of eking out an existence.
Now, before we leave the topic of the little references and such behind entirely, they had some other ones in there that this episode that kind of showed that same kind of creativity, but not necessarily ones built into the town. I mean, you have the shuttle PT-019U, which I would assume is probably a reference to PT-109, JFK's ship. We have the conduit worm being mentioned as what they think Gascom is, and that's from the Attack of the Clones Visual Dictionary. There's a reference to Malachor from the Sith Lords, the Second Knights the Old Republic game, the whole there's no way in Malachor, blah, blah, blah. I mean, they really did a lot of cool little references here. And one that turned out kind of ironic, of course, is you got Gregor's helmet with all the little tally marks on it that was supposed to be a reference to a Bruins goalie in hockey. And in the little bit on that slideshow, it says, sorry, NHL fans, this might be the closest to hockey you get this year. And that went up today, the same day that they announced that there is an agreement that should actually bring hockey back for this year, which I thought was kind of amusing.
Yeah, it was one of those unintentional jokes. I caught the Bruins thing. That's the number of stitches that the goalie expected to have if he wasn't wearing his helmet. And being originally from Boston, I did get a chuckle out of that. The characters split up. The Astromechs go off to explore the town, and Gascon and Wack go to refuel, and they enter in the diner and meet Barkus. And he's not really a fan of them, but it was interesting because I don't know if this is the first Sullustan we've seen in the Clone Wars, but he was an interesting take because he's not typically what I'd expect or what I've come to expect a Sullustan character to be like.
As far as I know, he is the first. Aside from being mentioned, this is the first time we've actually seen one in the series.
Again, I thought it was interesting, and you can definitely tell that Gascon is not very skilled in completing missions, because without really knowing the political leanings of this city, he jumps up and announces he's part of the Republic Grand Army and demands food. And, well, it doesn't work out too well for him.
I'm not sure if he should have wanted to eat there anyway. Granted, it was the only one they ran into, but I'm thinking about the trash outside they eventually go to. Just the design of that trash. Okay, even if they only pick up the trash once a week, what must they be serving if their trash looks like that?
It was the most colorful thing on the street, though.
And, you know, even dives of restaurants, diners, or whatever make, I would say, some attempt of getting their trash in the trash can of any variety, a dumpster or something. This is just like, hey, I'm just going to literally just dump this on the street behind my restaurant.
Oh, I think we're missing it. It's there to attract those bird things that we saw last time so he can get tomorrow's special.
Or maybe just enough of those little bug critters that they can make like their version of the McRibwitch.
It does, though, give us a sense of the plight, I guess, of Gregor when we meet him as the dishwasher and such, because, you know, aside from putting up with Borkus, who's kind of the loudmouth, blowhard, you know, I run everything type of guy, at the same time, you know, we don't get much of a sense inside the building of the conditions of the place. But as soon as you see that pile of trash, you can tell, I mean, not only is he a blowhard, but it's not really the most cleanly good environment in which to be working, which helps bring us a good reason to see why Gregor would be sort of beaten down. You know, he's lost his memory, and what he knows now is this guy and this place that's pretty nasty. So of course he's going to be sort of the meek person that we wind up meeting him as. I think as nasty as it was, the design of the trash played more into his character than it did into even the desperation of Gascon eating, you know, was it a piece of bread, I guess it was, from the trash, or trying to.
Now, Gregor, that is probably the most interesting character in this episode. Now, this is an individual who Gascon identifies very quickly as being a clone who has amnesia. Now, this is something that obviously we haven't seen before. A clone with amnesia. I, like some other people, originally thought when I saw the preview and when I knew that there was going to be a clone commando in this episode, thought that he was actually going to be maybe hiding from the Grand Army, and much like we saw in The Deserter, I think in season 2, where he basically decided he doesn't want to be part of this anymore or was stranded. But to have him completely lost touch with who he was is an interesting way to go.
See, this is where I feel like they had a really interesting opportunity. And they're kind of like Nathan was saying about the Bourne movies, where you have this person who's been, you know, programmed and conditioned, genetically altered to be a certain way. It would be really interesting to see him reacting to things and coming into his without all of that, except for like the genetic portion. And I feel like there could have been some really interesting stuff where maybe he's easily manipulated because he's conditioned and programmed and trained in some ways, manipulated genetically to be that way. And flashing back to Kamino, and I feel like that could have been really cool. And instead, he just kind of, I don't know, I felt like it just ended up being really cliche. Like, they didn't really want to try with this, and it makes me really sad because they could have done something really interesting here.
Jen, I think you just retconned why he listened to Borkus.
You know, my thoughts, and Jen, I'm there with you. I mean, my thoughts on this is that, again, like I said in my opening comments, is sort of answering the question that nobody asked. I get the feeling, and maybe I'm reading too much into Dave Filoni's comments, but too often do you hear Filoni, and he said it here, say things to the point of like, hey, we know the fans really like this, so we wanted to find some. Here I'm paraphrasing with my own, you know, connotation of what he's saying, so I'm not trying to misrepresent him. I'm trying to read between the lines and put it in little air quotes, is that, hey, I want to give the fans something they want, and hey, I played this video game too. I like Republic Commandos. So how could I find a meaningless, harmless, forgettable way to use a Republic Commando that will satisfy the fans, hopefully, but not rock the boat? Because Republic Commandos isn't anything George Lucas came up with. It's not from the movies, so I can't really take it seriously.
So he was Quinlan bossed, basically.
Thank you. You know, something like that, to where, here, guys, here's your Republic Commando. And Jen, to me, I also kind of focus on some of the practical aspects of it. I mean, just kind of weird, because he goes from, I don't even know what a clone is, to, okay, Gascon, you've convinced me. I understand that I must actually be a clone. I remember the battle now. Oh, hey, here's my armor. And now I am completely kicking butt and taking names. I would kind of think, practically speaking, he would lose, I don't know, some muscle memory, maybe not have full even memory of the things he could even do. And now suddenly, oh, hey, it's almost as like he got all of his powers back because he found his suit. And it just, to me, felt so forced, so contrived, just an unnatural part of the story. And like I said in my opening comments, I thought that could have just been a smarter way of doing it and not made us feel awkward that they did it.
The term I used was convenient. It was very convenient that somebody snapped their fingers and poof, he was back to the way he was. Now, what's interesting is the type of amnesia that he would have had from a trauma, post-traumatic amnesia, usually due to a head injury. And they typically, an individual would lose partially who they are, but forget up to a point that they had the trauma. But remember that clones are accelerated. One thought that I had is that if a clone with amnesia may lose a lot more because of how they're imprinted, their flash training, so to speak. And I think that would be something that they could have played with a little bit more than they did. I think that they, as was said, a real missed opportunity here to kind of go back and have maybe the Gascon and the droids have to kind of guide him along or help him rediscover certain things, and maybe that he wouldn't be all the way back, and that would be something that they would have to get over. He would, when he tries to get the blaster from Borkus the first time, you would think that that was something that a clone commander would be able to do without a problem, taking a blaster away from a cook, but he can't do it, and the droids have to take it away and restrain the Sullustan. I think if we had seen maybe a little bit more development with him regaining his skills, it would have felt more satisfying, at least to me.
You know, even like a 80s music montage a la Rocky IV of him getting back into condition would have been kind of cool.
Maybe a little joke where he can't get the armor back on quite then.
I mean, he is working at a diner, although apparently not one anybody would actually want to eat at.
I don't know. I think it were, I mean, for as compressed as they wanted to make it, it kind of it falters in the same way that Revenge of the Sith for many people faltered. It takes something that should be taking a lot longer and compresses it down for the sake of the length of whatever it is they're trying to produce. 2 hours or so for a movie, 20 minutes basically for this episode. But I mean, it's not like, and presumably he has retrograde amnesia, so any kind of amnesia from prior to the head injury or whatever it was that caused it in the first place. But it's not like they're saying, you're a clone, don't you remember? Think about it. Let's do hypnosis or something. I mean, they show him Rex. You know, it's you when you're clean shaven. Look, yes, you are a clone. They're able to scan his arm where he doesn't see anything, but there's apparently that encoded information there to tell who he is and where he's from. I mean, he's confronted directly with who he is and what the battle was. So, I mean, there could be, you know, some argument to be made that those are essentially triggers. You know, there's a difference between trying to remember something as a total clean slate and trying to remember something when you do have specific prompts. You know, you use that in education when it comes to, you know, keywords, key concepts to understand a bigger idea. So it feels rushed, but I didn't have a problem with him getting some of the skills back, because at least skills, probably muscle memory. Plus, he puts on the helmet and you immediately see that it is tracking. It's got the instrumentation and such in it. The light even comes on the visor. It's off whenever he takes it off. So you can figure that at least some of it's muscle memory, some of it is the help of the instrumentation within the helmet, within the gear and such. My problem was just that it was too fast, not so much that it was unbelievable. I mean, for this series, I don't think this was unbelievable, at least in the face of some of the other stuff they've asked us to believe in the past.
Nathan, I agree. It wasn't unbelievable in the context of this series. I guess I would have liked something to show that, you know, some sort of change and some sort of thing where, oh, I remember, and, you know, or at least let him earn it a little bit, because it was unclear. 1 minute he remembered some, but not all. The next minute you just weren't sure and you just went with it. Maybe my desire for that is a little bit more time with the clone commando, because it was the best part of this episode, and my displeasure to see him go. But Gregor does get his memory back with the help of D-Squad. He confronts his master and is able to regain himself, and the group gets some information that there is a plot going on to blow up a Jedi cruiser that happens to be in orbit. Okay, now this was another one of those, moments for me.
This right here is where I really lost it with this episode. Like, I was on board for the most part. Like, I wasn't happy. I wasn't thrilled. It wasn't my favorite, but I was on board until we got here. And I feel like my suspension of disbelief was just like punted out the window. Like, I couldn't do it, because like they have this shuttle, and they did a pan before they even introduced the concept, where there was this Republic shuttle just sitting there surrounded by droids. And I was just kind of like, what? And I made a note of it. Like, why do the droids have a Republic shuttle? Interesting. And then we come back to it and they're just loading. Who's piloting this shuttle? Why do they not notice this? Like, I just don't understand. And like, it bothered me. There's a suspension of disbelief, and then there's just sloppiness, and that sloppiness really irritated me. And that, combined with the fact that they do the things they do at the end, is just, I felt like this episode wasn't, they didn't try very hard.
It's as if they had two unfinished episodes in the queue. Like, hey, we took Gascon and D-Squad to this planet. Oh crap, now what? And they had this other story about a Republic commander who sacrifices himself for this mission. We don't really know what to do with these two episodes. Let's combine them. And if you think about why that Jedi cruiser's there, and compare it to why they crash land on the planet to begin with, there's so many things that you just can't reconcile. was the cruiser going there to look for them? Was it supposed to be there anyway? See, here's why I'm upset. There was a smart way of doing this. You could have had D-Squad go to that planet intentionally. The agent, yes, we found and we got the transmitter, send a cruiser and come pick us up. I mean, it could have all come together and made sense. But why the Separatists are even there, knowing the cruiser's going to show up, is just a pile of crap.
I'll give them the cruiser if only because of the description of next week's episode defining D-Squad as being on a deserted cruiser loaded with explosives heading toward a space station hosting a Republic conference. I think that's a deserted cruiser up there. So it would make sense for it just to be kind of sitting there, not used, not called there. You know, it's convenient, but it gives more of a reason to why it is that there's not someone, some intelligent individual aboard that ship who is either there for a reason, looking for something, found them already or anything like that. You know, and why perhaps the Republic wouldn't necessarily, or someone like Gascon, for instance, wouldn't necessarily know that there might be a Republic cruiser in the area, why they may not have picked up any transmissions on the way down. I want to give them that one at least until next week when they determine whether or not they are sticking to the description that they've given out to, like, TV Guide and such.
Well, Nathan, I'm glad that you shared that because I guess in my research for this episode, I didn't catch that that is next week we're going to find out that that's a deserted cruiser, because it was a major head-scratcher for me, like everybody else. It didn't make a lot of sense. I mean, I could accept that they had a Republic shuttle and maybe they were going to do something with it. You know, you capture things. Like, maybe it was even the shuttle that Gregor was on and they put it back together because you could tell it wasn't a standard shuttle. It had been modified. But when you see that cruiser in the air, you're like, where the hell did that come from? And why is it there? So maybe we'll get more information about it next week.
It makes me wonder if it's that the droids had the deserted ship and they came to the planet looking for the Iridonium rather than it being that the shuttle was already there. But again, that it totally depends on how things play out next week.
Does it help you guys to know that it's a deserted cruiser? Because to me, that's even more confusing. Why the heck is it deserted?
Well, it kind of gives me the point that, well, maybe we'll get some answers next week. Because right now, I thought that it was just a regular cruiser waiting for its, you know, shuttle to return. And that, as Jen put it, my suspension of disbelief was drop kicked out a window. But then, as they're rushing for the shuttle, we get what everybody's been waiting for. The Clone Commando in his glory. And I have to say, I was a tad bit disappointed because, Jerry, you and I saw this sequence
in its entirety.
Yes, that's it. We already saw this. I was hoping it was just a taste of what we were going to see, but no, we saw this already. And I was, while it was great and it was a real callback to the game, which I enjoyed playing, it was disappointing that that's all there was.
But what a sequence it was. I mean, it was not only a fun action sequence that we did get with the character and sort of a fitting end to someone who was finally, you know, gripping hold of the responsibilities they had before and their life they had before, where they would be willing to sacrifice themselves. You know, I finally found myself again, therefore I sacrifice myself, et cetera, et cetera. But I also found it felt like it was fairly true to the original source material, which is the Republic Commando video game. Because what is he shooting at? He's shooting at the explosive freaking red barrels you see in almost every shooter out there.
I liked it. I thought it was great. And when he says, I've forgotten how much I hate these guys, when the destroyer droids came out, I remember playing the game and thinking, oh no, not more of these, because they were just a pain to kill. But what would have been really cool, and Nathan, if you played Republic Commando as well, is if he had switched barrels on the gun and changed it over to, like, maybe a grenade launcher or a sniper rifle. Wouldn't that have been cool?
True.
And then we get a funny moment as D-Squad is running for the shuttle. BZ gets hit and knocked over, and Wack runs to him, and the colonel says, go on, save yourself. And Wack is like, okay. I laughed out loud.
I loved this part. I was really hoping they would leave him, but I knew they wouldn't, but I loved that part.
See, this is where some of my technical difficulties with the show caused me to kind of miss that joke immediately, because I watched this episode on StarWars.com on Sunday, and the audio was not synced. In fact, as we're recording this right now, the show's been taken off of StarWars.com. I assume they're fixing it or what have you. So my audio lagged 5 full seconds. Which doesn't sound like much, but it's kind of an eternity when you're trying to figure out what's going on. So I saw him run up, look into it, run back to the ship, and then like 3 seconds later heard, okay. So I kind of missed the joke in the moment because I saw that he just ran off and then heard, oh, I bet that would have been funny. So I can't judge it accurately, but it was just kind of weird that if you try to watch over the weekend on StarWars.com, you kind of got a goofy presentation. I'm assuming it wasn't my computer or just that moment in time with my bandwidth or anything, because right now that video has been taken off.
The group gets to the shuttle and Gregor saves Gascon, gets him to the shuttle, and it looks like he's going to sacrifice himself. He tells the D-Squad to take off and that he'll catch up with them later. And as they pull away, you see this explosion that you would think no one could survive, but as we've already heard, chances are that Gregor did survive it and we're going to be seeing him again. But Gascon makes a very sort of heartfelt speech, and then the episode ends. What did you guys think of how this resolved itself in this episode?
See, I didn't watch that video with Dave Filoni, so I was under the impression that this guy was most likely dead unless they were running out of story ideas and they were going to dredge him up later. And I was pretty annoyed. Like, I just, the idea that he sacrificed himself to save, not D-Squad, but just Gascon. That annoying little toad made it out and the Republic commander didn't. That irked me. I think they were trying to make this a really deep, heart-wrenching scene because they had like the chorus in the background and all this stuff, and to me it just came off kind of hokey, probably just because by then I was so fed up with the episode that I just wasn't gonna give it an inch. But did anybody else, I felt like it missed the mark in some way that I can't seem to quite articulate.
Well, when I watched the episode and I saw that, I remember thinking, oh God, Jen is going to be pissed, because you predicted this last episode. You're like, God, I hope the clone doesn't sacrifice himself to save Gascon, because that would make me really upset. And that's what you said. And I was thinking, oh man, she's going to have no tolerance for this one whatsoever.
No, as soon as I saw him like jumping in, like as soon as they had all of those droids in the same, I was just like, oh, he's going to die. This sucks. I was not happy.
Yeah, I think they telegraphed the whole is he dead, is he not dead sort of thing, because it was kind of the obvious, we're going to show you an explosion to where you have to think he's dead, but we're not going to show you anything really about the aftermath of it. And heck, who knows, maybe that armor he has, maybe he got under something. I mean, I think there's a dozen different ways that you could kind of think that he survived that, and he's going to show up kind of when you least expect it. That said, I do think, and you know, kind of Nathan, to one of your points earlier where you said that it wasn't, I'm paraphrasing here, but it's not that it was done bad, but it was just kind of rushed. And in my mind, it was bad because it was rushed. And this was sort of like a, hey, suddenly we're supposed to have this deep emotional, like, oh no, not the Republic Commando. You know, we've known you for like 3 minutes as a Republic Commando blowing up stuff that, like, you know, Jonathan, as you said, you and I already saw this entire scene. So to me, it was just like, okay, they're trying to build a dramatic moment for him to quote unquote sacrifice himself, and then D Squadron gets away. And again, it's just kind of a convenient thing because now we don't need to deal with him in the next episode as a character. He's not now hanging out with D Squad and you're trying to figure out what to do with him. He's like, oh, hey, don't, you guys just go on without me. I'll be fine. I'll get out of this. I'll meet you at the next town. So it's just kind of a neat way to bring him in, give the fans what they want with the commando, take him out of the story, and now we can move on and do whatever else we're planning on doing with D Squad. So I guess that's fine to tell the story that they want to tell, but it wasn't like a satisfying, hey, good job, Filoni and gang. You guys told a good story here today. I didn't walk out with that kind of feeling at all.
And I thought the episode itself, I mean, it was good. It just felt rushed. I mean, it's not going to be one of my absolute favorites, but I like the concept they introduced. I like the way that they use the character. You know, for what they had, it worked out well enough. And his ending, I honestly would say that just hearing Filoni say that he may come back is enough of a surprise. You know, I think him sacrificing himself was not much of a surprise. The idea maybe there is some future for this character, he's not one who's just a one-off character we've seen that's going to die. He makes his comment, you know, about, you know, once Maul comes back, there's a lot of people who are going to die. And given the fact that the novelization of those episodes is already out there, yeah, we've got some big deaths coming. To have him say, we might actually bring this character back after it looks like he sacrificed himself, that to me was a cool twist, even though granted it came the morning after having seen the episode when we finally got the Clone Wars download video, the featurette, up on the website. But, you know, for a rushed episode, a quick ending kind of makes sense. You know, where else should they have taken the time to expand the ending from? Because there wasn't a whole lot of fat they could cut. They sped through it so fast from the beginning. Unless you want to cut the fat from last week's episode or last episode.
I vote for that. No, this episode did seem to fly by. Did any of you feel that way? It just blink and you missed it. When I looked at the time and I'm like, wow, it half hour is up already? I was surprised it moved as quick as it did. I suppose that's a compliment to an episode because I was that interested and that involved that it moved by fast.
There was a lot going on, and I think if they had maybe bumped the previous episode, either shrunk it down or just deleted it entirely, and had this be 2, I think they could have covered all the things that we've been kind of complaining about and made people feel like they really got some bang for their buck, because they really were kind of pushing this, there's a commando, and I think all of us fanboys kind of go like, oh my god, this is going to be great, and then it just was over so quickly that everyone feels a little bit cheated, so I think maybe 2 episodes would have really done what was needed.
So that's what we think. Why don't we move on and hear what some of you thought about the episode? So the first one is from Ben Devis on the forums.
Hey, Republic Forces Radio Network. This is Ben, also Devis on the forums, and it has been quite a while since my last call-in, but with the Young Jedi arc being what it was and how you guys wanted to run those particular episodes, as well as the previous 2 rather disappointing installments in this arc, there weren't a lot of reasons for me to call in. However, there was a small ray of hope with this morning's episode, because finally, at long last, we were getting a clone commando. I myself am a huge fan of the Star Wars Republic Commando video game. I have logged so many hours into that in borderline on the ridiculous, but I have to attribute that to the multiplayer environment and community. And I've read the books as well, so you can imagine this fan's level of excitement when I first saw a fully armored clone commando running around and jumping and shooting droids and blowing things up in the C6 trailer, imagining all these great things. But after the credits began to roll on my TV, I wasn't left with an overly satisfied feeling. I wasn't or happy or anything like that. I mean, I am glad that we finally see a commando, but I was more disappointed than anything. Like, other than pandering to the more EU-based fans of the Clone Wars, I'm not really sure why Filoni and company chose to have a commando of all types in this episode. Now, like, not to knock the clones. I mean, I'm like Jen. I love all the clones, from the regular troopers to the arcs to the commandos especially. But any other clone soldier could have done what Gregor did in this episode. I mean, it was sure the way they did the explosion and Gaston's line at the end gives some small hope that Gregor could return in future episodes. But it was just disappointing, obviously. I'm sure I speak for the majority when I say that Gregor was the only good thing in this episode. I mean, if I went back and rewatched the episode and fast forwarded through the parts that didn't have him in it, I doubt I would have missed very much. I have no idea if there are any fans out there who actually like Gaston and actually find him funny. I'm sure the younger kids like him, but oh, I can't stand that little snail. He's so aggravating. He's just can't wait for next week's episode so we can finally be done with him and never have to see him again. Overall, it was a fun episode, but I really wish they would have done more with Gregor. I know they can't do a whole lot, you know, with the way they plan their episodes and everything, but this is a clone commando here, people. We don't see them very often. They need to be used to the fullest extent, and that didn't happen here. So other than all of that, I look forward to hearing what you guys think of this episode, and that's about it. So I'll hear you guys then. No, I'm losing it, so I'm going to go. Take care, guys. Bye.
You know, there are 2 points that I wanted to address that you talked about, Devis. The first one is, did it have to be a clone commando? Well, my thought is that I'm not sure that in the context of this story that it could have been any clone trooper. I think clone commandos have always been billed as kind of the one-man army, especially in the game. You're taking out countless droids, most for long stretches completely independently, other stretches in the group of 4. And I think that a typical clone trooper wouldn't have had the skill set to accomplish what he needed to accomplish in this story. The second point that you said is you think that Gascon maybe appeals more to the children. Well, one of the times that I viewed this episode, I watched it with my youngest son, Caleb, and I turned to him after it was over, and I'm like, do you like Gascon? And he looks at me and goes, No, he's annoying. So even the kids don't like Gascon.
Would you agree, though, also, though, with he kind of got at the point that this really wasn't Gascon's story. I mean, this was Gregor's story. It's Gregor's episode. If you had cut out the parts that weren't focused on Gregor, you wouldn't have been missing a whole heck of a lot. I like the fact that this episode, it was a departure from those characters we didn't like so much because it was so focused on him. You know, maybe we need more episodes that are part of a broader arc that focus on an ensemble character rather than a specific group that we've already seen focused on in the previous episode.
Oh, I preferred that. I really did like that Gascon and D-Squad as a whole was kind of removed to sort of almost second tier. It was Gregor's episode. I just wish that it hadn't ended with Gregor's removal from, or likely removal from the storyline.
You know, the one thing about Devis's voicemail that kind of made me realize something is that I actually don't mind Gascon as a character. I've kind of, I don't want to use the term because it's awfully strong. Not saying I like him, but I am relatively intrigued with him, and I'm sitting here thinking, what could they have done really interesting with a character like that? I think what's annoying is actually more of the pit droid and how he treats Gascon. Now, you can argue that, well, yeah, it's because of Gascon as a character and what they try to do with this little frog guy trying to lead the squad of droids, and he's tiny because he can fit in the droid. Ha ha, isn't that funny? But to me, I think Gascon could be a intriguing character in some other story. It's the pit droid that brings all the annoying to the table. And of course, 90% of his interaction is with Gascon. So I think it's easy to displace that onto Gascon, but I don't think it belongs there. I'm actually not hating on Gascon.
So you're not going to follow the spinoff series where the two of them get an apartment together then?
Yeah. Oh, there's an odd couple if we've ever seen one, right?
All right. So why don't we hear what our next caller had to say?
Hey, Republic Forces Radio Network. This is Zach here giving my thoughts on the episode Missing in Action. I really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was probably the strongest in the storage arc. The only complaint I really have for this episode is, well, you know, we got the Republic Commando that, you know, I was totally hyped for, and, well, it looks like he's dead. I felt like they just kind of put in a Republic Commando because millions of nerds asked for, you know, we want a Republic Commando because, and I will say that I'm glad that they used, like, just an original Republic Commando, Gregor. That was really cool. And not anybody from the video games or novels. All right, those are my thoughts on the episode. Bye.
I, too, like the fact that at least it wasn't somebody that we'd already seen. He didn't take a character that had previously been explored in some other medium and then tweak them to somehow fit this, you know, kind of, like we said, Quinlan Vossing him or Greedoing him and such, as you might say, for this series. Although I had to sit back and sort of chuckle about the idea that, you know, this guy could have been part of D-Squad. Because, of course, in the game, we have Delta Squad, and I was remembering back somewhat fondly, I guess, to the whole issue where in the New Jedi Order novel series, George Lucas basically ordered that it be Anakin Solo to die rather than Jason Solo because, well, he was telling the story of Anakin Skywalker in his films, and he thought readers might get confused about two Anakins. Gotta wonder if they didn't let him join D-Squad because, well, we can't have D and Delta be out there. It'll confuse people if they're all Republic Commandos, even if they do have different names. Gotta wonder.
Okay, and our next voicemail is from Matt.
Hey guys, it's Matt, or Darth Maxo from the forums. Just wanted to give my impression for the latest episode of Clone Wars, Missing in Action. Wow, that's the episode everybody's been waiting for, I think. After watching the episode, I mean, it was a fantastic episode, fun, lots of action, yet some intrigue also. Makes you kind of wonder if the first two episodes of the arc couldn't have just been combined into one and would have made a lot more sense that way. So the finer points, kind of fun to see character models in the Tatooine-like setting. Kind of look like Ponda Baba in the corner there. And what's his name? Gascon, man, he was still super annoying through the whole thing. Really annoying. The only thing I really enjoyed about it was towards the end of the episode when he got shot and I guess BZ got shot and he fell over and he said to the corporal, save yourself, and corporal said, okay. I thought that was funny. I laughed out loud. So A lot of cool stuff with the expanded universe, I think maybe they're kind of meddling with, which is kind of neat. At first I was wondering if the new undiscovered clone, I guess, might have been Scorch, and from his markings, I guess probably not, and maybe the ending, I'm wondering, you know, we're all wondering if he's going to make it, and it didn't show him dying, so I imagine he could show up later on in the series. So another thing, the only thing that annoyed me is still the droid hate going on from Gascon, which is really annoying. Lots of great stuff about the episode, but super excited, going to keep watching. You guys, keep up the good work.
Now, as far as the droid hate, I was thinking back, I think only one comment that I can remember could have been construed as droid hate, and that was when Gascon tells the Astromechs that they could run on batteries. Was there any other droid hate that you guys picked up on, or did I just miss it?
Well, Wack gets kicked out of the diner, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't Gascon giving him the droid hate, which is what I think Matt might have been alluding to, or maybe he was feeling that the diner they kind of kicked out. But that was kind of like a call back to, you know, the Mos Eisley Cantina, wasn't it?
Yeah.
All right, and our next voicemail is from a different Ben.
Hey, this is Ben. I am not on the forums. I'm calling because I actually really liked A Sunny Day in the Void. I thought it was pretty unique in the episodes that we've seen so far of the Clone Wars. Incredibly bleak, really hard to watch, but in a good way. So I thought it was really challenging to the audience also. So that might be a little too arty of a reason to like it. But I also thought that the character development with the little frog guy was kind of cool. Missing in Action, on the other hand, I thought kind of missed an opportunity to have some, you know, some interesting character development with a clone character. And instead, they just had this guy magically turn back into a fighting machine. So that's my two bits. Not a whole lot to say. Thanks. Bye.
Well, Ben, I first want to say thank you very much for calling in. And I'm actually glad to hear that you liked A Sunny Day in the Void, because that means that it did appeal to some segments of the Star Wars community, which is what we want. We want Clone Wars to give everybody, you know, at least something that they enjoy. So I'm thrilled to hear it, even though it wasn't our taste. I am glad that it was yours. As far as your comments about this week's episodes, yes, I think we all agree that there were missed opportunities here, although I still think it did give us a lot to enjoy. All right, our next voicemail is from Eric.
Hey, everybody out there at RFRN. This is Garrett calling in with my thoughts on the latest Clone Wars episode, Missing in Action. First off, this episode was not what I was expecting it to be. When I saw the preview for it, I was expecting that the clone commando they found was hiding from the Republic. He didn't have amnesia. He was a rogue clone, sort of like Cut was back in Season 2. He was hiding, but no, he wasn't hiding. He had amnesia. His transport crashed. But I liked it the same way, and I really liked this episode a lot more than the last one. The last one was painful, I think, for everybody to watch. It was just stupid. It was just stupid, really. It screamed filler to me. It was a filler episode. But anyway, back to my thoughts on this one. I like the fact that Gregor didn't leave with everybody else. He stayed and held off the droid forces. And I thought that that was pretty cool. I thought that showed some character in him. And they reminded him of who he is. I like that. I like the fact that we didn't get a clear insight if Gregor was blown up or if he survived. It looked like he was blown up because he kind of blew up the outpost. But I don't know. I guess we'll have to see if he comes back. I think he's dead because he sort of blew up the outpost. But I think he's dead. But that's just my opinion. Can't wait for the next new episode and can't wait to hear you guys talk about this. And can't wait to hear your thoughts. And I can't wait for you to hear my thoughts. I will see you later.
He brings up a really interesting point, and I think it kind of touches on stuff that we haven't entirely articulated, but it's bothering us, and that this episode wasn't what we thought it would be, and I think that's something that they maybe need to keep considering before they show these things in clips and stuff like this, because it sets people up, and it gives them this preconception of what the show is going to be like. And instead of approaching this with a, you know, clean palette, as it were, I think I might have personally enjoyed this more if I had no idea what was going to happen, as opposed to having, you know, tidbits thrown in my face. So it's interesting to see that a lot of people are more frustrated with the fact that they feel misled by the advertising than by the episode itself.
Yeah, I mean, I still contend that I think the show, when it comes to his death, intentionally has kept it vague. I mean, even before he got to Filoni's comments on the featurette, I mean, it's clear they want to have the opportunity to do something else with him if they get the opportunity to do, you know, something new or maybe something outside of kind of what they've already got planned for X number of episodes down the road. But yeah, I mean, without the body, without actually seeing him quote unquote die, strong possibility that he's still around. So I don't think there's anything to be too terribly disappointed therein. Jen, I think you're right. I think this is just a constant theme of, hey, let us show you something really exciting and awesome and then have it be so insignificant and forgettable that I guess they certainly accomplished one goal by having it create a lot of hype and a lot of excitement, but then there's the big, you know, crash at the end. So yeah, I don't see them changing anything because they're 5 years into it. They're going to show clips like they always show clips. And it is a little unfortunate. I think we just need to start training our brain a little bit better. And we keep falling for it too, is the thing. I mean, everything they showed at C6 was amazing looking and got you really excited. And here we are halfway through the season. It's like, oh, that's all there was to that. It's like, oh, that's all there was to that. And okay, well, we've got some things coming up and let's hope they deliver on the home run that Filoni and gang have promised that hit.
Here's a question for you guys. Do you think that we rob ourselves by assuming that we're going to see more than we do? Do you think that maybe we don't allow ourselves to enjoy what they do give us because sometimes we kind of psych ourselves up to expect so much more?
We do sometimes. I mean, that's sort of the nature of the beast with Star Wars, and that, of course, was the big issue with the prequels, especially The Phantom Menace, when you had a lot of reviewers who were slamming them because of what they expected rather than what was actually in the films themselves. But then again, Star Wars has sometimes pulled that bait-and-switch type of thing before. I mean, I've recently been rereading all the Marvel stuff for my From the Star Wars Library videos on YouTube, and there's an issue in which it says, you know, the hunt for Han Solo is over, or the hunt for Han Solo ends here, something like that, where it shows on the cover Lando and Luke standing in front of Han in carbonite. And by the end of the issue, what do you get? A Rodian in carbonite that was a red herring to draw them into a trap. If the hunt for Han Solo ended there, it was only because that line of looking for him dried up when it turned out not to be him. So it's kind of one of those, yeah, I guess they sort of told the truth, but not really. It's the old point of view type of thing. So yes, we psych ourselves up, but at the same time, you know, they have a measure of responsibility to make sure that what they present is not something that very easily or obviously misleads.
And our final voicemail this week is from our old friend Glenn.
Hey, this is Glenn Dooku calling in about Missing in Action, the first episode of 2013. And I think the reason that they wait so long between episodes is they knew that the last episode was so bad. They wanted you to maybe forget about it, because this episode was just like the opposite end of the spectrum. I mean, you have like the worst episode of the whole show, followed by what might be one of the best episodes of the whole show. And that's really odd, but I mean, you know, it certainly doesn't make up for the last episode. And I mean, I think you pointed out a lot of faults with the first episode in this arc. I just think it was still very enjoyable to watch, even if it was sort of unrealistic and stupid and whatnot. But I definitely think that, you know, I watched the newsreel part very closely, and we very easily could have skipped over that last episode, like I was saying last time. And I think he would lose absolutely nothing, and it actually would be much better and would even flow better. I'm not quite sure where they're going to go with the fourth episode here, but this was really great. You know, what happens if a clone gets amnesia? It's sort of a different take than the deserter. I kind of like that. I would have rather the guy didn't die, but they had somehow rescued him. But I really like how they played it out. It was sort of slow. They sort of found the sky. They had the diner. You know, it was really nice. I think they did a lot of things. They really hit all the right marks. And since they weren't in the middle of the void, you know, the visual elements were good. And I really enjoyed this episode. And I think it may be the best one of the season, which is at least kind of odd considering what it followed, and maybe that's just, you know, making me think it's so much better than it actually was, considering how bad the last one was. But I'm interested in hearing what you guys have thought. Bye.
Well, Glenn, thank you for your thoughts. I'm glad that you liked it. I personally don't think that it was the best episode of the season. I mean, we've had some really strong episodes this year so far, and I think we're gearing up to some other strong episodes, but it was enjoyable, and I'm glad that you liked it. Well, that kind of wraps it up for Missing in Action, but before we go, I'd like everyone to kind of give their final thoughts, and once again, we will start with Jen.
My irritation with how it ended aside, it wasn't a terrible episode. I do feel like there was some misinformation in like the advertisements and what they kind of led us to believe. And I would almost rather they didn't tell us anything, or if they just said, you know, there's going to be a clone commando in this or something like that, instead of misleading, because I think that does bother the fans. People do pick up on certain little hints and things that they suggest, or just even just the way the footage is cut. There is sometimes a little bit of bait and switch, and that can be frustrating. So, but you know, taken out of context, removing all of my preconceptions, you know, this wasn't a terrible episode. I do wish they had spent a little bit more time on certain aspects, because I feel like it could have been really interesting. But overall, it was okay. It was much better than last time.
You know, Jen, you revisit an interesting point. Imagine the impact that it would have had for fans if they had no idea that it was a clone commando that was coming. And when they find out, the first time you see him put that helmet on, fans would have like just lost their minds, don't you think?
Oh, definitely. And I think it could have been a lot more interesting. I think there would have been a lot more hype after the fact. And I think that's one of the failings in, I don't know if it's the network that does the adverts. And I know Lucasfilm cuts together the trailers and things, but I feel like they almost show too much. Like, don't show us all these things. Cause then when we get to the season, then it's like, oh, this is great. Instead of spoiling it and getting people's hopes really high and then kind of giving us this mediocre eh.
I don't think this is simply a Lucasfilm Clone Wars issue, though. Movies for a long time have had this problem with the advertisements giving away too much. The one that comes to my mind is, if you think way back to, I believe it was 1991 with Terminator 2, where if you watch the film without seeing anything ahead of time, you don't know which of the two Terminators is supposed to be good and which is supposed to be bad. Or you don't even know that one of them is a Terminator. But all the media and everything else ahead of time really gave away the secret and the surprise. And I think sometimes I specifically, and I know lots of people talk about going into things spoiler free, but I think this is one of those times where I think it would have been so much more powerful.
You know, Jonathan, a perfect example of that, and I think there's a pattern of behavior, if you will, in Star Wars. To me, the thing that annoyed me most is when the Phantom Menace trailer, the original teaser trailer, showed Darth Maul whip out the double-bladed lightsaber. When I first saw that, I got so excited. And then when I actually watched the movie, it occurred to me, it's like, oh, yeah, that double blade. I almost forgot about that. Yeah, okay, whatever. How cool would it have been if you sat in the theater and watched him pull that thing out and had no idea it was coming? Now, of course, we got all the action figures and the toys. It would have been almost impossible to have hidden something like that. But it's, to me, a good example of something that could have been really amazing on screen.
They've tried to do that with toys before. And I'm going to reach back into your vintage territory. Didn't they, for Return of the Jedi, they wanted to keep the Ewoks a secret, so on the backs of the original cards, they blacked out the Ewoks so you wouldn't know what they look like, sure. Right?
Even in the toy catalogs, they would kind of blank out anything that had to do with Ewoks, the plushies, the figures. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but Star Wars, I mean, these days, and even at the beginning, Star Wars wasn't really about being entirely spoiler-free, which is why I always have to laugh anytime Lucas is, you know, we're going to film it under a different name so it doesn't reveal it to anyone before the film comes out. Because they put out the novelizations these days a month before. I mean, they released, I mean, even with the Clone Wars, they released Shadow Conspiracy, the book that novelizes Revival and the next three Maul and Death Watch episodes back at the beginning of January, like earlier, I guess it was this past week. So the spoilers are all out for that. And let's not forget, the original Star Wars film released in May of 77 had its novelization released at the end of 1976. If you were paying attention, you already knew what was going to happen. Star Wars and spoiler-free have never really gone very well together.
All right, Jerry, any last thoughts for us?
You know, nothing new, but I will echo one of Jen's thoughts. This, despite some of my ramblings, not a terrible episode. I mean, this is one that I can see myself going back and watching on the Blu-ray and maybe even jumping to this episode sooner than later, and certainly not in order of the arc, although maybe this arc would be kind of fun to watch, interesting, different perspective to watch all these shows together. But yeah, I'd be very interested in going back and watching this. A pretty decent little episode, and I like a lot of what we've said about might they have shortened the previous episode, made the journey to the city maybe not a non-event, and then spent more time on developing the clone back to who he was. I think that would have been a better use of the show's storytelling to focus on, hey, we found a commando and how can we incorporate him into the mission, et cetera, et cetera. So, but, not playing that game where I'm criticizing for what it wasn't and just focusing on what it was. Yeah, fine. Decent little episode. I'm glad to see the arc starting to, go on the upswing a little bit.
Nathan?
I'm sort of the continuity guy for us here. I would be remiss. There's one thing I did want to mention that we hadn't had a chance to previously. When they talk about the Battle of Sarish, S-A-R-R-I-S-H, where he apparently saw heavy fighting, that is actually covered in a comic book. They dipped back into the comics. That is the battle from the comic Routine Valor from 2006, written by Randy Stradley, a.k.a. Mick Harrison, a.k.a. Wells Hartley, because he's written under those names also. It was also included as the fan club special comic back in 2008 after being the free comic book day special in 2006. So it's kind of cool to see them dipping back into that. A lot of cool references within this episode. I think there's a lot more than meets the eye in some respects. You have to really go through and look at the different slideshows and such to see all the different little tidbits they put in. They jam-pack a lot of stuff, including a plot that should have probably been bigger than 20 minutes into this 20-minute episode. I found it enjoyable for what it was, but I think I'm right there with pretty much everybody else in that if they had just allowed this to be a little bit longer, they just focused a little bit more on Gregor and given him a little bit more time to develop, it could have been an absolute great episode. But I'd still put it up there in probably the top, 25% or so of episodes that we've got of this series up to this point, and that can't be bad. I mean, at least we saw a Republic Commando for longer than we did in Witches of the Mist, where they were just toting around a body.
So, Nathan, was Gregor specifically in this comic?
No, there were no Republic Commandos in the comic. It basically features mostly Commander Cody. It's mostly just regular, clone troopers having to fight their way through a pretty desperate situation.
So they dip into a comic to reference a battle that never showed a commando, but then indicated in this episode about a commando who obviously saw a lot of physical harm or, damage to have that kind of amnesia, but there's no commandos anywhere in the comic.
Kind of, yeah, but the comic is, it's a very sprawling battlefield that they, no matter which shot you're looking at, they tend to have a lot of stuff going on in the background. So of all the battles, they could just slip them in and say, yeah, they were there, they were just somewhat off screen. This is one where it would have made sense. I mean, unlike doing something like taking Kean Farlander from the X-Wing video game and saying, yeah, he was one of the pilots at the Battle of Yavin. Didn't you know? Didn't you not hear him give his call sign? Kind of stuff.
And I got to kind of give him credit for that, because it would have been just as easy for them to pull a name out of a hat, come up with something. But, somebody was paying attention and decided, hey, this would be a good way to connect to another part of EU. And I think this goes back to something we talked about very earlier in this season. They seem to be paying more attention to EU and giving a little bit more love to some of the fans of EU, which is far different than they have earlier seasons. I'm going to echo with everybody else. Yeah, we kind of complained a little bit about what we wish this episode could have been, but looking at this episode for what it was, I did enjoy it. And I will come back to it, because I think some of the visuals in this episode, especially the 5-minute clone commando whooping droid butt at the end, would just look amazing on my home theater. So overall, I think this one is a positive entry into Clone Wars. But next week, we're going to get the conclusion of this arc with Point of No Return.
All right, good deal. Can't wait.
See you next time.
I do think I remember that movie. Oh, wait.
All right, everyone. Have a good week. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Arnie, Dan, Jen, Jerry, Jonathan, Nathan, and Barrett. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all of the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark, Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2013, all rights reserved, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media, Incorporated.